On a Monday, we're learning about managing diabetes amid the pandemic. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. According to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 34 million people in our country have diabetes, and having type 2 diabetes increases your risk of severe illness from COVID. And meanwhile, researchers are looking into possible connections between blood sugar levels and the coronavirus. How are you coping with diabetes during these times? 88 million adults in our country are pre-diabetic. What questions do you have about pre-diabetes? Have you successfully reversed your diabetes diagnosis? We're at 800-642-1234. Paul Knutson is an associate professor in the Department of Medicine in the Division of Endocrinology at the Medical College of Wisconsin, where he directs inpatient diabetes management at Froedtert Hospital. Dr. Knutson, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's start out with what it is like to manage diabetes amid this pandemic. What can you share with us?
Well, it's important, whether the pandemic's going on or not, to have good diabetes control. It prevents complications, both short-term and long-term complications. The long-term complications, of course, are nerve damage, kidney damage, eye damage, large blood vessel damage, such as heart attacks and strokes. So it's important, whether the pandemic's going on or not, to maintain good diabetes control. All of those things get better with good diabetes control. The short-term complications include fatigue and susceptibility to infections, which of course does have an impact during the pandemic. So poor glycemic control or blood sugar control during the pandemic does put you at increased risk for complications related to the COVID itself. So it's important always to maintain good diabetes control.
Are there any links that you're seeing from researchers? What do we know about any connections between COVID-19 and diabetes?
Well, it's hard to know exactly what's going on. The research is young, and a lot of studies have come out related to COVID and diabetes. It's hard to have absolute answers because it's such a young disease. But as far as we can tell, poor glycemic control makes COVID worse. COVID makes diabetes worse and makes it very difficult to manage. Not only that, healthcare workers generally have free access to patients when they're in the hospital, but patients with COVID, you have to try and limit your access to the patients so that the nurses and physicians taking care of those patients don't get sick also. So there's a lot of problems related to taking care of patients with COVID in the hospital. The elevation in blood sugar related to COVID is very severe. So it's difficult to treat the patients to get good glycemic control in the hospital in those patients with COVID.
Have you been seeing any of those types of patients?
We've been seeing quite a few. They're very sick. Let me say that there's a range, of COVID patients, and this is, leads to a lot of confusion, where there's people who are all the way from very asymptomatic to those who are severely ill, so severely ill that they have to be put on bypass machines that bypass their lungs to oxygenate through machines. So there's a wide range, and we've seen quite a few very sick people. And those people who are very sick have a very difficult time getting their blood sugars under good control. We think this is related to the hormones that they secrete, the cytokines. Cytokines are a type of hormone that's secreted by the body to try to fight off infections. In COVID, there seems to be an exuberant response of these hormones.
We've heard of the cytokine storm.
Correct, yes. So the cytokine storm causes instability in the normal hemostatic or physiological maintenance that we have. And that leads to all sorts of blood pressure and circulatory problems. That also has a side effect of making the blood sugars very high and very difficult to control.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Paul Knutson, who's an associate professor in the Department of Medicine in the Division of Endocrinology at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And we're looking at managing diabetes amid COVID. How are you coping with your diabetes during the pandemic? What questions do you have about being pre-diabetic? Have you successfully reversed your diabetes diagnosis? What did you do? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's take a call now. Chris is joining us from Racine. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I don't actually have diabetes, but I am an RN that takes care of lots of patients that do. And what has struck me over the last 40 years is 40 years ago, we had a very strict diet that diabetics maintained. And the blood sugars, I didn't see fluctuate as much as they do now. Nowadays, when patients come in, they typically eat whatever they choose. And when I ask them, hey, can't you avoid cake? They said, well, the insulin will take care of that. So I'm seeing a great deal more fluctuation of blood sugars, and I wonder where that diet,
the diet piece went.
Yeah.
Dr. Knutson.
So she has a great point. Diet has a huge impact on glycemic control or glucose control, and it's important to match the diet to the insulin or the other medicines that you're using to control your blood sugar. Obviously, if you have a lot of dietary variability, you're going to have a lot of glucose variability. So the more stable and predictable and constant your diet is, the better your sugars are going to be. We often try to have a carb consistent diet, which decreases that amount of variability. Obviously, there's patients who have a lot of dietary indiscretion. And the philosophy over the last years is to let the patients have a little bit more flexibility, try to get that carb consistency and educate them in the hospital that, you know, the amount of variability that they're having in the hospital has impacts, and it's important to try and be as consistent as possible. And that teaching that occurs in the hospital, they can take home with them. But it does lead to variability, and your nurse is absolutely right.
Well, when you talk about that teaching, you know, a lot about diabetes, especially in the onset with a new diagnosis, is about education, right? Is about getting those sugars under control and explaining how you manage it. In the pandemic, you can't really do that, I guess, in person so much, going through these training sessions, or can you?
Oh, that's a great point. So you're absolutely right. So there's a couple points I want to bring up with what your question. One is diabetes is a self-management disease. That is, it's up to you as a patient to take good care of your diabetes. And our job is to educate you and give you information to help you do that self-management education, or that self-management, give you those self-management skills. So that's our job. But it is the patient's job to do those skills. Then the second part of your question is, can we do that in the hospital? And the answer to that is it is a little bit more difficult because the patients are in isolation. You can't educate them quite as well when, and you can't spend as much time with the patients. And oftentimes there's not enough PPE for everybody to go in the room and teach the patients what they need to know in as lengthy a time as you'd like to know. And often, you know, they're very sick and not quite as up to it as they would normally be. So, you know, we have to do the best we can. Hope they learn, and, you know, hope they follow up as an outpatient to learn more.
We're pausing there. We're getting to all your questions about managing diabetes in the pandemic with internist and endocrinologist Paul Knutson of the Medical College of Wisconsin. What medicines do you take for your diabetes? Do you experience side effects? What are they? What kind of treatments have you considered for managing? How have you asked your healthcare provider about different approaches to your diabetes? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we discuss diabetes care during the pandemic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 1 in every 10 people have diabetes in the U.S. According to the CDC, total medical costs and lost work and wages for people with diagnosed diabetes has risen to $327 billion annually. And researchers are now taking a closer look at the connection between diabetes and COVID. How are you doing with your insulin, your test strips, your insulin pump system, access to medicine now? Were you laid off or furloughed and worry about how to afford your insulin? Bring your questions, 800-642-1234, your situation. We have Dr. Paul Knutson from the Medical College of Wisconsin. He directs inpatient diabetes management at Friedrich Hospital. Dr. Knutson, let's focus on type 2 diabetes, this disease often associated with the onset in adults. How does age affect diabetes care?
So you're right. Type 2 tends to occur in adults, but it can occur at any age, from young kids as young as 10 to 11, 12, all the way up to the, 80s, 90s. Type 2 diabetes is hallmark is obesity, truncal obesity, that is putting your weight around the middle, strong family history. As we get older, we're more susceptible to it, and oftentimes needs more and more therapy over time to get good control.
Are older people at higher risk for diabetes? You mentioned young children can even get type 2 diabetes. Where are the major risks?
Yeah, so the major risk is obesity. And of course, obesity is associated with excess calories and decreased activity. That's a major, and the family history. So there's a genetic component, and then there's a lifestyle. If you put on weight, you are inactive, you have a family history of diabetes, you develop insulin resistance. That insulin resistance means that the insulin doesn't work as well in controlling your blood sugars. Over time, your insulin secretion decreases, and that decreasing insulin secretion leads to worsening of your blood sugars over time. It's not unusual for people with type 2 diabetes to end up on insulin, just like people with type 1. Type 1, of course, is an autoimmune disease where their own immune system attacks their pancreas and they need insulin from the onset of the disease. Type 2s, there's a lot of different therapies. Exercise and diet are key, but there's, in addition to insulin, there's a lot of oral medicines and non-insulin medicines.
What is considered pre-diabetes?
So pre-diabetes is not a disease. It is a classification that says you're at increasing risk for developing diabetes. And there are blood sugar cutoffs for that, for fasting blood sugars, for example. So blood sugar between 100 and 125, a fasting blood sugar between 100 and 125 puts you at increased risk for developing diabetes, which is a fasting blood sugar above 126.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Knutson, who directs inpatient diabetes management at Friedrich Hospital. We're talking with him about diabetic care and treatment amid the pandemic, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Michelle joining us from Madison. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling this morning because my daughter was diagnosed about 3 weeks ago with type 1 diabetes, actually, and she was positive for COVID this summer. And when we went in, the doctor I said, well, do you think this could possibly be related to COVID? And she said that they, of course, like the doctor said, that this is a new disease and they don't really know, but that they had been seeing a lot more diagnoses of even type 1 diabetes since COVID, and they were wondering about, how it's affecting the pancreas.
Yeah, Michelle, thank you. So anecdotal stories there, Dr. Knutson, but what would you tell Michelle?
Yeah, so Michelle, sorry to hear about your daughter's diagnosis. The good news is there's a lot you can do to maintain good control and have a very long, healthy life. So in general, type 1 is you're born with some sort of genetic susceptibility to type 1, and then there's usually an assault to the immune system that triggers type 1, the development of type 1. So it's genetic susceptibility, then an immune trigger, then developing type 1, clinical type 1. So it would seem logical to me that COVID could be that trigger, and I think there might be a link, but again, too soon to tell. I think it's certainly possible.
Is it possible that that diabetes will be with her daughter for life, or is this something that later on in life she may not have these issues?
So type 1 diabetes at this juncture is a lifelong
Okay.
disease. We are working on cures. It's a long ways off in terms of, pancreas transplants and islet cell transplants. We're working on research, the scientific community on islet cell transplants. So we can take a pluripotent cell, change it into a beta cell, and make insulin in animals, but we haven't quite done enough research on that for humans to know that it's safe. So there is research, but we have a lot of tools now. So we have insulin pumps, we have continuous glucose sensors, and now we have a closed loop where those continuous sensors talk to the pump and actually help control the amount of insulin that the patients are getting to do a better job of controlling the blood sugars.
And so you wear this continuous glucose sensor on you, is that right?
That's correct. And you change the sensor. It sits in your subcutaneous space. It sits on top of your skin, and a probe goes into your fat underneath the skin, and it measures the interstitial glucose, which is related to the blood glucose. And it measures that relatively continuously. And that data is then sent to the pump or sent to you or to your phone. And it allows you to make adjustments in your diabetes management to keep the blood sugars in better control. We change those sensors every 14 days or so.
Let's take another call now. Steven is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Steven.
Hi, doctor. I have a question about your thoughts on reversing type 2 diabetes. I personally had, I don't know if it's an abnormal experience, but I had extremely, what began with extremely high cholesterol of over 300, actually. And my doctor told me that I was on the verge of type 2 diabetes, and I just completely switched my diet to a whole food plant-based diet. Some people would call that vegan. And I dropped my cholesterol to 190, and my doctor, who is concerned about the type 2 diabetes as well, said that my levels all were normal. And I've been living this way now for almost 4.5 years, and it seemed easy to me to just change my diet, and I was wondering if those results, if widely used, would that result in similar results for others?
Stephen, may I ask, how do you feel now that you've changed your diet so radically?
I mean, I feel great. It was obviously challenging initially. But once you switch over, it becomes second nature. There was a previous caller who was talking about diet, and she said, she asked her patients, like, why don't, can you do without the cake? And I was just at a baptism this past weekend, and family brought a vegan cake for me. So, I didn't, have a ton of it, but I was able to enjoy my cake and enjoy my cake and eat it too, I guess you could say.
Well, Stephen, yeah, thank you for bringing your experience, Dr. Knutson.
Yeah, so congratulations, Stephen. I think Stephen is a good example of what can happen. He's absolutely right. Aggressive diet and exercise can really prevent diabetes. So there is a study done, the diabetes prevention trial done by the NIH, which was published, I don't know, about 2000. And it showed just what Stephen said, that aggressive diet and exercise can lead to reversing or preventing diabetes. And these are looking at people who are in that pre-diabetes, so are at high risk for developing type 2 diabetes. And people who had aggressive diet and exercise were able to forestall type 2 diabetes development. Stephen is a great success story. For some reason, people just don't do as well as Stephen does. And in general, people have a hard time. And maybe we should make it easier. I don't know the answer, but congratulations to Stephen. And people can be like Stephen.
We're in an hour-long conversation about diabetic care with endocrinologist and internist Paul Knutson from the Medical College of Wisconsin and Frederick Hospital. Are you a type 1 or type 2 diabetic? How do you manage your disease? How often do you take insulin? Do you need a syringe or needle, pen pump, inhaler, other device? How is your health amid the pandemic? Taking all your questions about diabetes at 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Dr. Knutson right after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about diabetic care amid the pandemic. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, says that people with chronic conditions like diabetes are at increased risk for serious illness and death from COVID. And data published in June from the CDC found that COVID patients with underlying conditions were six times more likely to be hospitalized. Are you diabetic and battling COVID? Share your experience with us. Are you worried about having to ration insulin because you've lost insurance and can no longer afford meds? It's 800-642-1234. We have Dr. Paul Knutson from the Medical College of Wisconsin. Let's take another call now. Michael is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Michael. You're on with Dr. Knutson.
Hi, Kate. Hi, doctor. I just have a story and a question for the doctor. So I know we were talking about how a lot of people have diabetes. My daughter's mother has it. She's had it since she was 11. She has to take insulin every day, so I'm guessing it's type 2. And she's had a lot of problems with keeping it under control, and it just seems like that she's just stubborn, and she doesn't want to take her medicine when she's supposed to, or she doesn't want to stop eating, you know, sugary stuff, or you know, like we said before with the cake. And she doesn't like drinking water because she says she doesn't like the taste. So I think it's a lot of times with people, it's just a stubbornness because they know what they're supposed to do, but they don't want to do it. And the question I have is, since how did they manage diabetes in the past? And was it really as bad as it is today? And if it's worse today, what is the cause?
So some historical context.
Yeah, so type 2 diabetes is a relatively newer disease in the sense it's always been around, but it's as our society has become more mechanized, we've had more access to food and more less access to exercise, let's say. So we're not an agrarian, we're not doing the gathering as much as we used to, and we get mechanized food delivered, so there's more availability of calories, less exercise. So we become more sedentary in our lifestyle. So that's why type 2 is much more prevalent than it used to be. Type 1's been with us for a long time. And the technology and the drugs and to treat both those diseases has advanced over time. So it's actually getting a little bit easier to maintain good control with drugs, but diet and exercise are still a very important component of both the disease treatments.
How can we help a loved one with their diabetes?
Well, you know, it's good to be supportive, but it's usually not helpful to be their policeman. People often know what to do, but, you know, just like, it's hard to avoid the sweets. It's, if you think about your life, and that's certainly true for mine, I have a sweet tooth, and I'll have the Halloween candy when I shouldn't. And so, I think it's true of all of us that our diet leaves a little bit to be desired, and we could all do a little bit better. And it's being supportive, eating a healthy diet, eating portion sizes, good portion sizes. That's all important. And if you're supportive in that, that's good. If you go to the grocery store and don't buy the sweets for you, and that supports your partner. So those sorts of things are helpful, but it doesn't help either of you to be the policeman. It's psychologically stressing for the person with the disease. It's psychologically stressful for you if you're trying to nag them.
Let's bring in Linda now, who's joining us from Chicago. Hi, Linda. What's your situation?
Yeah, hi. During the beginning of the pandemic, I couldn't work out like I had been because the workout places were closed, and I couldn't eat at work where they had a cafeteria as much, so I wasn't eating right or regularly. And I was working a lot, and I'm in a sedentary kind of job, so I started waking up in the morning with like kind of numbish or tingly feet, and I didn't know at first what it was, and I started to think maybe it was blood sugar because my mom's diabetic type 2, and I'm thin, but so I've tried to change my habits since then, although I'm still struggling to work out a lot. And I'm just wondering, I don't eat sweets, but I do eat fruit, and I've tried to cut that back too. And I'm just wondering, is there a way, like my A1C I had tested in August, and they said it was 5.8. So they said to cut out the sugar or white stuff or, and
Yeah.
that it's kind of a pre-indicator of pre-diabetes. So then I was just wondering, can I reverse it and get rid of that neuropathy in my big toe and my left foot, which just remains? Otherwise, it's pretty normal.
All
Or
right,
am I
Linda, yeah,
stuck with it?
let's get Dr. Knutson here to respond.
Yeah. So, so neuropathy, so the symptoms that you're having certainly are consistent with diabetic neuropathy. I'm not sure that's what you have. Your blood sugar, your A1C is actually pretty good. So pre-diabetes A1C is 5.7 to 6.4. So you're on even on the low limit of that pre-diabetes. It's possible that even at that low level, people do get neuropathy. But it's more likely that there's another cause of your neuropathy. For example, trauma can do it. Like if a runner can get, or athletes get kind of a turf toe. So hopefully that's what it is in your case. In terms of your point about preventing diabetes, just like we talked about with Stephen, diet and exercise is important. Even when you're thin, it's good to stay. To have a good diet and exercise makes you healthy. Physical fitness is a strong predictor of mortality. So it's good to stay thin. Good to stay active.
Dr. Hugenson, in this time, though, some people are just experiencing much different lifestyle changes. And so, fitting in those opportunities to care for oneself may be much more difficult right now.
You're absolutely right, especially if your technique usually includes a gym or a trainer. On the other hand, going to the state parks and going to the trails around here, I've seen a lot more activity. So that's the good part. I mean, I see the parks being used more than ever. And that's a good thing. And we have a treasure in Wisconsin, and you should take advantage of that treasure at the parks and trails around here. And
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of COVID puppies too, and puppies a good way to stay active too.
Oh, the parks are just absolutely glorious, and was out this weekend at one of them. Paul Knutson, Dr. Paul Knutson, is Director of Inpatient Diabetes Management at Frederick Hospital, and we're talking with him about diabetic care and treatment during the pandemic. Taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Dr. Knutson, let's talk about insulin and the cost of insulin. How are you seeing your patients with their injections and the affordability?
Yeah, that's a big deal. The cost of medicines really skyrocketed. There are some programs that are helpful to try and get some foundations underwrite cheaper insulin, but for the most part, it's very expensive, and you can't afford things unless you have insurance. There are some cheap medicines, metformin, which is very common drug, first line drug for type 2 diabetes, is inexpensive. Some of the older type 2 drugs, which still work quite well, are inexpensive. The more recent developed drugs, of course, are more expensive. And for some reason, insulin has gone up quite a bit. The drug companies are charging more and more for their insulin.
Is there a generic way to go, or is that also costly?
Yeah, so yes, it is still costly, but there are generic drugs coming out for insulin, new varieties of the same drugs. I'm not sure exactly why that's generic. I think they're still made by Lilly, but they are coming out with cheaper versions.
Can you explain the use of insulin through shots versus using the pump system?
So shots are it's a personal choice which one to use, and really you need to talk to your provider about the options. Oftentimes, if you're going to use a pump, you need to see an endocrinologist, diabetes educator, which includes a nurse and a dietitian. So that, that's an aggressive team that will help you pick what's best for you. Pumps lead a lot of are very sophisticated, and they are very expensive. They're about $6,000, and then depending on how much your insurance covers, how much of that is out of pocket. They are sophisticated. They need a lot of tending. You need to be able to troubleshoot them. So they're a significant amount of work, but they do give you more flexibility than injections. Injections work pretty well for type 2 diabetes. People with type 2 diabetes don't have as big a need for a sophisticated system to maintain good control. And again, for type 2 diabetes, there's a lot of different medicines out there to help maintain good control.
Medical College of Wisconsin internal medicine physician and endocrinologist Paul Knutson is answering your questions about diabetes care and management, especially at this time of a health crisis. How are you coping with diabetes? What questions do you have about pre-diabetes? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Dr. Knutson. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with Dr. Paul Knutson from the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's answering your questions about diabetes this hour. And meanwhile, researchers around the world are investigating questions about a potential link between COVID-19 and diabetes. Let's take another call. Now, Carol is joining us from Mequon. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when she was 2.5. And one of the things, she's now 13, one of the things she's had to struggle with is the stigma of being diabetic. And what I've, what we've come to understand is that people generally do not understand the difference between type 1 and type 2. And so, she gets a lot of of judgment that maybe she did something to cause her diabetes, when of course at 2.5, what could she have possibly done? And my second question is, because she's type 1 diabetic and a child, what her risks are with COVID compared to, let's say, a type 2 diabetic and an adult? Because I've heard some studies saying type 2 makes you more at risk with the COVID.
Great questions, Carol. Thank you. Dr. Knutson.
Yeah, well, it's true that there's a lot of stigma associated with both types of diabetes. The only thing I can tell you is it's more helpful to be upfront about the differences and to educate people. Things like this radio show can help. So, you know, type 1s, again, it's autoimmune disease. Type 2 is a genetic disease on top of lifestyle changes. So even people with type 2 diabetes have a hard time preventing their diabetes, even though it is possible. It's a hard thing to do because of that genetic predisposition. In terms of the risk for COVID, people with type 1 diabetes, so obesity is a big risk factor, whether you have type 1 diabetes or not in COVID. So if you're obese with normal blood sugars, you're at high risk. So the obesity does have a big impact. And most people with type 2, of course, are obese. So there is more risk with type 2. But if you have a poor A1C or poor glycemic control and you have type 1, that does put you at increased risk from COVID too. So it's important to maintain good glycemic control to avoid complications of COVID, whether you're type 1 or type 2.
And take all those public health precautions as well, I would assume, social distancing and washing hands, wearing a mask.
That's a great point. Yeah, if you don't have good control or you're not comfortable where your diabetes is, you should be more aggressive with staying away from people.
Let's bring in Eric in Summit Lake this morning. Hi, Eric.
Hi.
Hi. Hi,
okay,
Eric.
So
yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Okay, I just say I'm having trouble losing this last 30 pounds. I've restricted myself. I've been a diabetic about type 2 about 8 years, and I've really worked hard to lose as much weight as I could, and I've lost about 70 pounds. On my own, with my own diet and everything, but I just can't make it over that hump, the last 30 pounds I need to lose. I have two friends who lost 100 pounds each, and they're not diabetics anymore. And they look great, and they said they feel wonderful and all that. So that's my whole problem, is that because I was bigger, of course, I ended up with knee problems. And then my grandmother passed from complications of diabetes when she was 68, probably 60 years ago, you know, so I've got that in my family. But my diet, I can maintain that myself. It's just that they think that if you're a diabetic, you're a sugar addict. So then everything you can buy that's for a diabetic is so ungodly sweet with that, you know, stevia or whatever. And I'm not really a sugar junkie. You know, I just like good food. And
you just want to get to those last 30 pounds, and hopefully you think that might really be able to, reverse your diabetes. Dr. Knutson, what would you say?
Yeah, well, I would first want to congratulate him, because losing the initial 70 pounds was outstanding. And actually, you don't need to generally – any weight you lose, if you lose 10%, that's a huge benefit. So he's done very well. And maintaining that weight off is a huge benefit too. So even though he may not have reversed it entirely, he's done a huge advantage to himself. Diet and exercise is the way to go. But there's this genetic predisposition that it's hard to get all the way down and reverse everybody. And so, you know, I would just congratulate him, tell him to keep up the good work and keep doing what he's doing.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric. John called from Mason, couldn't stay with us, was wondering if there's any stem cell research going on for type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
There's stem cell research for type 1. I'm not sure exactly where they are with that. part of the problem is the stem cell research you injected, and it gets destroyed by the same autoimmune process still. And so they're trying to hide it from the immune system. The other thing, of course, is when you convert a stem cell into a beta cell, there's always the question, are you turning on cancerous genes too? Are you going to create a cancer in the patients that you inject these things into? So that research is going to take a long time to be shown one way or the other is safe and effective.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Paul Knutson, who is an associate professor in the Department of Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. We're looking at managing diabetes, especially now amid COVID. Dr. Knutson, how important is it for someone with diabetes to meet with an endocrinologist and diabetes educators? What is that relationship like?
Yeah, so, you know, most of the people with diabetes are treated by their primary care doctors who do a good job. But if you're having difficulties, if you're having struggles with your diabetes, it's good to take it to a specialist. And whether it's a dietitian, nurse educator, and they have special certification, which leads to a CDE, which is Certified Diabetes Educator. And they've been trained in pathophysiology and the education of people with diabetes. And they really help invigorate your knowledge and give you tools to self-manage your diabetes so that your diabetes stays under good control, which is the key.
What about stress and sleep with diabetes?
Very good. Yeah, sleep is key. That's a very active area of research. But if you're not getting good sleep, your diabetes is very difficult to control. So people with obstructive sleep apnea or other sleep disorders have more difficult to control diabetes. And we're not exactly sure why that is. But people who do have sleep problems tend to move less. And that may be one component of why they have more difficult to control diabetes. Their appetites are probably off too. So that's an area of active research and hopefully treatment. But in the meantime, if you have those diseases, if you have sleep disorders, get those treated, and that will help with your diabetes.
Judy called from Minocqua, couldn't stay with us, and says, Judy's husband is a type 1 diabetic, has been on insulin for 71 years. He's 78 now. He walks miles and miles every day, also kayaks. Judy says there is so much hope if you just take care of yourself. So, you know, right there, certainly a success story.
Oh, yes. And, you know, if you look back to the history of diabetes and the technology has been getting better and better. Initially, people with diabetes in the 1890s, the only way that they stayed alive was to starve so that they wouldn't build up acid in their blood. Then insulin was invented in the 19 or discovered and made commercially available in the 1920s. And people were alive, but then we found these complications in the 1950s. And it really in the 1990s, we understood that tight control prevents those complications. We really weren't able to do those studies until we were able to do fingerstick blood sugars to try and maintain good control. Urine testing before that was too inaccurate to drive tight control. The testing has become more and more easy and less painful and more accurate, and now we have continuous sensors which are very useful in certain patients, and it's really so diabetes, especially type 1, the technology is really helping maintain good control.
Dr. Knutson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Paul Knutson is an associate professor in the Department of Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Just ahead, it is 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.